Denali is the highest peak in North America. Four wounded warriors are attempting to summit right now. We interrupt our regularly scheduled broadcasts to bring you this special report about these Purple Heart recipients attempting this incredible journey. Get involved. Follow their climb and listen to our exclusive interview with team leader Mark Hoffmeister talk about this expedition and how these vets are preparing to climb.
Welcome to Purple Heart Radio, the voice of the veteran. I'm your host, Mr. Z. We have the honor and the privilege once again to be talking to Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hoffmeister, who has now returned back to his, as you say, base and home in Alaska after successfully summiting Mount Denali with his group, Operation Denali. Sir, congratulations, first and foremost. How does it feel?
Oh, thank you. It feels great. It's a little surreal being back on terra firma and no longer surrounded by glaciers and snow, but it's a wonderful feeling.
You know, there's been a few emails which have circulated, and even from people who've listened to us. One of the questions that our listeners wanted to know is, what is the first thing you did when you finally got back home?
Oh, come on, that one shouldn't be too difficult. Had a beer and a steak.
And just to continue that trend, what is it that you're doing right now?
Right now, I'm doing what every good Alaskan does in June and July. I am sitting aside the Russian River, fishing for the famous Russian red salmon.
Well, it certainly appears as though you're acclimating well.
It was a hard adjustment, but, you know, we're getting back in action.
Now, I'm sure there must be a flurry of emails and media and all sorts of other things, but in retrospect, looking back, sir, this is the first time we've really had a chance to speak in a recording ever since you successfully were able to summit Mount Denali. Although, unfortunately, only half your team was able to summit, it was a tremendous success because none of the climbers, no one in your team, actually had to stop or fall short due to their injuries or their prosthetics. Your training was a complete success. It was because of the mountain itself and the altitude sickness that it caused. Can you discuss a little bit about how that was and the fact that you all would have continued on with your injuries, but it was the mountain itself that unfortunately prevented half your team from summiting?
Yes, sir. We've been asked the question, you know, what if you fail or what are the challenges that you confront? And it's always been the answer that, you know, our greatest concerns weren't our injuries, our greatest concerns were the altitude and the weather. By and large, we were blessed by the weather, and the altitude is an unknown. You just don't know how physiologically you'll respond. And that's what got two of our climbers, unfortunately. You know, but they achieved no small feat. You know, one reaching 16,200 feet, one reaching 17,200 feet. For the listeners out there who have not been at that altitude, there's not a lot of oxygen. So, you know, it's a remarkable feat. And the fact that only half the team successfully summited really reflects the statistical demographics of successful climbs on the mountain. Only 50%, you know, actually succeed in even climbing Denali, and those are the reasons. So while it's a bittersweet thing to accept, we're proud of the fact that it wasn't our injuries that impacted our ability to summit, that it was the same thing that gets every other high-altitude climber, you know, those two unknown beasts of weather and altitude.
And it's not like you get to the top of the mountain, like, hooray, we made it, and you get on an escalator and go back down. You still had to pick up your crew members and still do the descent, which in itself had to be an extremely arduous thing. So it's not to say we went up 17,200, 17,500 feet. It's really you had to go that distance between your food caches and going up and down. It's almost three or four times. So what was it like coming back down the mountain with the crew after, you know, you had to make these tough decisions?
Sir, well, that is an excellent point because the summit of any mountain is only half the battle. And a summit doesn't matter if you can't get back down. It's not a zero-sum game, I guess you'd say. And especially for us and for our situation as a team, the climb back down was almost an equal challenge to the climb up. Simply because of the disabilities that we're dealing with in the climb, the greatest challenge, frankly, for Matt and his leg prosthetic was going down, not up. He could go up like nothing. In fact, was, you know, regularly outpacing, you know, full-bodied climbers. But going down, the full weight of the, you know, the loads we were carrying would impact directly on his suspension, on his prosthetic. And it would, so it would be pounding on his stump instead of the supports, which really, you know, caused a good amount of physical pain. So coming down the mountain, we had to change our strategy. We literally took almost all of his weight off of him in order to reduce that impact and then cross-leveled it within the team. And then we minimized some of our time. Instead of doing a 12 to 15-hour day, you know, we walked 6 to 8 hours in order to allow some recovery time. You know, as you descend down the mountain, in addition to picking up your teammates that, you know, we had, you know, Matt was at 14,000 feet just recovering from his altitude sickness. But we also had all the additional gear that we had cached as we moved up the mountain. By the time we got to base camp, we were quick carrying some pretty heavy loads and incorporating all those factors to safely get off the mountain and get everyone home to that steak and beer.
That had to be the best tasting steak and beer anyone's ever had.
That was pretty good, but, you know, after you've been at altitude for a while, the fizz of beer tastes a little funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with a very happy Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hoffmeister with Operation Denali. We will be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor. Stay tuned as we talk to Colonel Hoffmeister about what's next and changes that would have been made climbing a mountain. You're listening to Purple Heart Radio, the voice of the veteran.
Are you prepared for an emergency to protect your family? What steps do you need to take to be prepared for an unforeseen threat? Earthquakes, severe winds, snowstorms, volcanoes, acts of God could jeopardize the important people in your life. Answers are available from American Preparedness, a free online preparedness list showing how you can prepare for that emergency. Visit AmericanPreparedness.com, download this information, offered as a public service. AmericanPreparedness.com, a provider to the American Red Cross.
Every year, around 250,000 people leave the U.S. military, many searching for employment opportunities. If you're one of them, why not use the organizational and leadership skills, the self-discipline and work ethic you've developed to your advantage? Pick up a copy of Operation Franchise magazine now, or subscribe by visiting us on the web at operationfranchise.com. Veterans Helping Veterans, Operation Franchise presents information and content on how to become a successful franchisee. Be your own boss, operationfranchise.com.
Everybody is talking about Enjoy. That's N-J-O-Y, an electronic smokeless cigarette. Enjoy all the pleasures of smoking without all the problems. Contains no tobacco or 2,000 other cancer-causing agents. No flame, so there's no first or secondhand smoke. Provides nicotine pleasure. Offers the flavor of traditional cigarettes, as well as menthol, strawberry, vanilla, and apple flavor. Here are some typical testimonials. Edwin C. is a smoker for 45 years and says, Enjoy gives me the freedom of satisfying a habit I've had for over 45 years and not being judged for it. Robin S., smoker for 15 years, says, I believe the negative aspects of smoking are all the harmful additives that they put in cigarettes. Everything that has to do with smoking, I think, is really bad for you. But to be able to smoke Enjoy without lighting up, I think, is a lot better for you. Go to Enjoy.com to learn more and get your Enjoy today. Use the promo code PH and receive a 10% discount. And Enjoy will also make a donation to the Purple Heart Service Foundation.
Are you tired of spending hours a day doing primitive exercises when you can get better results in minutes? Burst Training does just that. Studies show that doing 10 minutes of burst training is equal to 60 to 80 minutes of regular strength and cardio training. The only burst training gym in Colorado Springs is Quick Gym, the fastest gym in the West. Call 719-637-3180 for your appointment. That's 719-637-3180 for the fastest gym in the West.
Dragon Slayers and WildfireTools.com would like to bring you this public service announcement. Do you think that urban areas are the greatest risk for terrorist attack? World landowners need to prepare today for the possibility of planned wildfire attacks on our nation. Cheap, low-tech, and devastating, we have all seen the pictures of twisted cars and burned-out foundations left after strong wildfires have passed through rural and even urban settlements. Learn how to prepare and survive such an event. Visit homelandterrorism.com, wildfiretools.com, or dragonslayers.com today.
And we are back to Purple Heart Radio, the voice of the veteran. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hoffmeister, who is back home fishing after a successful climb with his crew of Operation Denali. Sir, in retrospect, they say hindsight's 20/20. You made it. Tremendous success. A number of, you know, very memorable things happened, obviously, on your way up the mountain and down the mountain. But if you could have done anything differently, now I know you mentioned the altitude, but if you could have done anything differently, what would you have done?
If we were in an unconstrained environment, I would definitely have liked to have done some more acclimatizing climbs with the team. You know, smaller mountains, like, you know, Mount Rainier, or some traverses of some glacial terrain up here in Alaska, because what that would have allowed us to do would be to better refine some of the equipment we were using and some of the modifications we made to the prosthetics en route during the climb. We probably could have identified earlier, and that way wouldn't have had to handle it in stride while climbing Denali. So that would probably be the greatest change. I think overall physical conditioning and our mental preparation, we were there, we had our game faces on, and we were well prepared. But some of the technical specifics that could have been gained by smaller climbs before taking on, you know, the largest mountain in North America would have eased some of the challenges and made us more aware of how some of the altitude could have impacted each of our climbers.
And from having made, is there any one day, point, anything that you saw, any encounter with anything or anyone that truly sticks out in your mind, an unforgettable moment, if you will?
Well, there was an unforgettable moment. It's also a sad moment. It didn't necessarily affect our team, but did affect the climbing community and affect the families of some involved, where, you know, we were unfortunately witnessed the recovery of two climbers who had fallen and were killed in a climbing accident. Not something that anybody wants to be exposed to, but what it does also do and did for us while climbing was remind us of the reality of the risk and the challenge that we were taking. Nothing that we didn't understand. And it was nothing that we didn't accept stepping onto the mountain. But whenever you're faced with, you know, a visual reminder like that, it brings things home, you know. And many of us have seen enough medevac choppers take off in combat that it's hard not to be reminded of some of those days gone past when we watched as those climbers were recovered and flown off the mountain by the patrol, the rangers up there. The closing thought on that is we do truly feel for the families of the climbers that were killed in that incident, and we feel for the loss to the climbing community. But we hope that everybody does understand that this is a risk that all of us who climb and place ourselves in that path of danger, we accept and understand those risks and feel that they're worthwhile.
And with all due respect to these climbers, I'm sure that we're very well qualified, but it certainly to us, when we were reading this on the internet, reminded us of the, as you said, the reality of it all. These are two individuals who are able-bodied climbers, not dealing with any injuries, obviously, like you all were. And if I'm not mistaken, they were just ahead of you. You were at the same or near the same camp, and you were about to go through what they just went through. So that had to be a real kind of like a wake-up call to say, let's make sure we're doing everything 100% the right way.
Yes, sir. I mean, there was a bit of a wake-up call, but I mean, their climbing technique was different than we were. They were more experienced than we were, so they took a little more risk than we did. We used more fixed protection and more people on a rope to ensure our safety. I mean, in doing the risk assessment for approaching this climb, I mean, a lot of those were considerations that I put into how we approached the climb, given our injuries, given our disabilities, how it is that we could mitigate the risk. So, you know, we always had 3 to 4 climbers on a rope team, for example, which means you have a greater ability to self-arrest any falls of one climber on the team.
You made the unfortunate reference of a medevac, your days in combat. Although half your team summited, in the combat veteran mentality, it is because of all the veterans, all of the climbers, that you even got to summit, for them helping you on your way up and on your way down the mountain. Can you discuss that a little bit, and did the military mindset come into play as climbing?
Yes, sir. I think it really did. It took the team to succeed. So although only three climbers reached the summit, it couldn't have been done without the entire team. It was the entire team whose physical load-bearing carried the necessary food, gear, fuel up the mountain to enable our summit attempt. You know, of course, it's unfortunate that everyone doesn't get up there, but that's true of many things. And, you know, the parallel you referenced, too, is that, you know, with a wounded soldier even, something that not everyone really thinks about, but the sacrifices made by those men and women who are wounded in combat or fall in combat, their sacrifice, it's a necessary portion that goes into enabling our nation to win its battles, to win its wars. You know, without the sacrifice of our wounded, those victories would not come. Never an easy sacrifice that everybody isn't at the finish line, but an unfortunate and necessary one at times.
Moving forward, you've made this tremendous climb. You've inspired more people than you can imagine. Many people are going to talk about this for some time. What is next for you and your wife, Gail? What is next for the team? Are there any imminent plans, or is it just kind of get some rest and take it one day at a time?
Well, no big plans for the team yet. We would definitely hope to work with other organizations to try and enable future climbs similar to ours, because I know there's other people out there with the same type of desire. And I've worked with a large number of groups. So hopefully things can come together and we can perhaps resource or organize a future effort of other wounded warriors to do a similar climb. As for my wife and I, we definitely have a continued burning desire to climb. The next one will be a little lower key than Denali, but we plan to take a vacation. And yes, we do call it a vacation. And we'll be climbing Kilimanjaro in February coming up here. That's just kind of a personal trip where we can get away and enjoy our time on the mountain together.
You certainly deserve a vacation. I would wonder what it would take for you to take a trip to the beach, but...
I'm at the beach right now. I'm on the Russian.
Well, sir, you enjoy your time on the beach. We certainly hope to keep in touch with you. Keep Purple Heart Radio abreast of development as they go. This is always a venue that is available for you to address the veteran community and the civilian community who supports the veterans at purpleheartradio.com. And we wish you the best of luck. In closing, is there anything that you'd like to put out there to our audience right now? The floor is yours, sir.
No pearls of wisdom other than to express my sincere appreciation to Military Order of the Purple Heart and the Service Foundation and to Purple Heart Radio for this, giving us the voice to share our experiences and to share what we hope is an inspirational story to motivate others out there who really, truly appreciate that support that you've given us. Thank you.
Well, sir, speaking on behalf of myself and Purple Heart Radio, and I'm sure many other people, we thank you for showing us that anything can be possible. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Purple Heart Radio, the voice of the veteran. I'm your host, Mr. Z. We have been graced to have multiple interviews with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hoffmeister with Operation Denali. We urge you to listen to it and to go back and listen to the past shows, the Colonel and his crew climbing Mount Denali. This is Mr. Z with Purple Heart Radio saying thank you very much, sir, and have a great day.
You have been listening to a Purple Heart Radio exclusive interview with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hoffmeister discussing Operation Denali. We now take you back to our regularly scheduled programming.